WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
The new movie, Made in Heaven, starring Timothy Hutton and Kelly McGillis, opens this week. My guest is the director of the film, Alan Rudolph. Made in Heaven is a major motion picture with all the trimmings, big budget, top stars, and that's a departure from the kind of quirky, personal films Rudolph usually likes to make. His films Choose Me and Trouble in Mind are both dreamlike with drizzly, neon-lit atmospheres. They're set in seedy bars and rundown diners with drifters, tough women, and other characters far out of the mainstream. They're dark films with a comic edge. Rudolph broke into the film industry working as Robert Altman's assistant director. Altman produced Rudolph's first two films, Welcome to L.A. and Remember My Name. Since then, Rudolph has maintained something of a dual career, writing and directing his own movies, while also directing studio-produced films like Songwriter, Roadie, and Endangered Species, none of which turned out to be big box office successes. I spoke with Alan Rudolph earlier today from the NPR Bureau in New York. He told me how he was offered the chance to direct Made in Heaven.
After Choose Me, I was used to making films that A, nobody either saw, or B, they saw and didn't care about. And I'd never been sent any screenplays. It didn't bother me because I like to do my own. And after Choose Me, I was in Seattle shooting Trouble in Mind, and Choose Me and Songwriter had come out at the same time. Songwriter was a film I did immediately following Choose Me. And apparently they started to cause some attention in Los Angeles, and I got sent some scripts. And Made in Heaven was the first one I read, and then after I read about four or five, I thought that was enough. And I tried to get The Moderns done, which is a film I've been trying to do for 12 years, and I said I wasn't really interested in doing anybody else's work, but I couldn't get The Moderns started, so we took this to a studio, and they said yes.
When you were making Made in Heaven, was there ever a voice in the back of your head saying, this is a major motion picture, you can't be as quirky, it's not solely your film, and you can't take the chances that you usually do?
Well, that wasn't a little voice, that was a loudspeaker right in front of my face. I've made four movies for studios. I haven't had any luck with distribution. This should be the best distributed film on that level I've made. But, you know, there's a built-in compromise, basically, for someone like me. Because I've also had the privilege of doing six films on my own where there was nobody to tell me anything other than to support what I was trying to do. But once you've been around this process a couple times, you know that going in. And the best thing about Made in Heaven was if you could just execute what was there, it was okay with me and it was okay with them. It was sort of a bargain we had struck with each other, them being the studio. But I probably on my own would have made it a little darker and weirder. But in some ways I'm glad I wasn't allowed to do that.
Why?
Well, because I think it's, you know, that would have meant fewer people would have been interested and it would have been more tumbleweeds in front of the theater, you know. And I think this is a real nice movie that should be seen by people who care about themselves, and I didn't really want to scare anybody away.
Well, I think you still managed to make it a very personal film. And let me just tell a little bit about the story. Timothy Hutton and Kelly McGillis play two people who fall in love in heaven, and on the day of their wedding, she's sent back to Earth as a baby, and he begs to be sent to Earth, too, so that he can find her again. And he is, but there's no guarantee that he'll ever find her or that they'll recognize each other if they do. And if they don't find each other by their 30th birthdays, they'll never meet and they'll never find happiness. And consequently, the movie is always hovering between the sense of magic and the sense of despair and loss.
Just hearing you repeat the storyline sounds like hard news to me. It's a Hollywood fable, you know, and in the best tradition, and I think the best of those films were made in the 40s, so the film has a kind of a 40s sensibility. But I was really interested I'm only interested in the human factor in anything, and I'm not real good at giving you mayhem and murder on screen, because I really want to know what's going on in their minds, more than in their guns, you know. But this one was about, we call it the Rambo of romance. It was really a romantic film with that dead center and not pushed to the side while some hard plot was taking place. And, you know, the budget wasn't that big. I mean, it was big for me, but not by Hollywood standards. It was actually about $4 or $5 million less than what the average film cost. It was made for $10 million, which you and I could have a lot of fun on, but... when you do a studio film, that's not a lot of money.
You know, I got the impression from the movie that you found the pleasures of heaven just slightly dull because there's no tension, there's no suffering that leads to the pleasures, and that you probably preferred the rough and tumble chaos of earth.
Well, heaven to me is the setup in this story. You know, I mean, it's obviously you can't do any research, and whatever version you come up with is valid because who knows if the place even exists. But you're accurate there. I was more at home in this hellish earth than I was in heaven. But the thing I like about our version of heaven is that it's not all floating around in clouds. I mean, you can have a beer, you can make love, you can go to a movie, you can do whatever you want. And there was a purpose to your occupation in heaven, which is to find new ideas so you could do something. And but the film is just a dream to me. I mean, all films are dreams, and making them is rather dreamlike too, but this one is really a fantasy, which is not an easy thing to do because once you capture it, it's there permanently. And the script was loaded with special effects and all that, and I don't really want to do that. I'm not interested in it, and I didn't want to find myself in a moment with an intimate moment with the two actors in front of a blue screen, you know, and say, imagine that you're tumbling through clouds, you know. I couldn't see myself doing that, so we tried to do some of the touches in heaven like they do in theater, where the magic and the mystery is partially on the audience's imagination. But the shooting of it was kind of confusing because we weren't allowed to do it in continuity because of production requirements and restrictions. So we'd be shooting a scene 1946 before lunch and a heaven thing right after lunch and something in 1972 before we wrapped, and everyone was confused all the time. I'm still confused.
My guest is film director Alan Rudolph, and he did the films Welcome to L.A., Choose Me, Trouble in Mind. His new movie, Made in Heaven, opens this week. Now, as the American public is about to see your new movie, Made in Heaven, you're about to put the finishing touches on a movie that you've been working on off and on for 12 years, the movie you referred to a few minutes ago, The Moderns, which is about artists in Paris in the 1920s. And that movie features actors who've become almost your repertory company, Keith Carradine, Genevieve Bugeaud. What are some of the advantages for you as a director to work with the same actors on a number of movies so that you really know them intimately?
Well, that's the reason. It's like any other good relationship. I mean, when you first meet people or first work with people, and Made in Heaven was kind of interesting because I'd never worked with any of the cast before, and it's a great cast. But it takes a while to learn your style, your processes, your fears, how far the trust goes before it turns into suspicion. And I think a lot of acting and the relationship between actors and directors really is primarily should be built on trust. But Keith and I have now done 4 movies together. And it's almost eye contact tells each other what the other wants, you know. And Genevieve, who the first time I worked with her in Choose Me, is now in this was her third film with me. And Geraldine Chaplin's in it, whom I worked with twice before. And it's really interesting because they predict what you want, or at least guess at it. And I'm a kind of filmmaker who leaves a lot open to interpretation for the very moment we're doing it. I don't really like to have anything too well planned except for the purpose of what we're trying to do. And I work with some excellent actors on the same film who I've never worked with, so it was an interesting combination.
No, Genevieve Bigeau and especially Keith Carradine never seemed to work much outside of your movies. And I don't know whether that's through choice or something else.
Well, actually, Keith works all the time. He does a lot of television movies, and he's done quite a bit of features. Oh. He's one of those very underrated, almost invisible actors, because he changes for every role, and he doesn't live the Hollywood persona. You know, he's got a couple of kids and a nice wife, and is really a very, very down-to-earth person. I really am fond of him. But he's been in a few films with Walter Hill. He was in a Louis Malle film. He's a couple of Altmans, Ridley Scott's first film. He works quite a bit. Also in the film is John Lone, who is the star of the new Bertolucci film, The Last Emperor, and Linda Fiorentino, who is probably most remembered for After Hours, and Wallace Shawn, who is a terrific actor. But he's not really an actor.
Yeah. He's really a playwright.
He's one of those unique individuals who doesn't have to know everything to be able to do everything. And he was at my dinner with Andre, and a real good young actor named Kevin J. O'Connor, who plays Hemingway in our movie. So it was a wonderful mix of actors.
You met, I think, Keith Carradine while working with Robert Altman.
Mm-hmm.
You were Altman's protege for a while.
Right,
in
yeah.
Hollywood, right?
I hired on as his protege. Said protege wanted to apply here.
Do you hate it when people say that?
I never knew what it meant. I mean, I always assumed it was their problem, not mine. It was a thrill working with Altman. I mean, I still see him every now and then. I have nothing but regard and respect and fondness. And I mean, I think he is like a most great American resources, which is underappreciated and threatened with endangerment. But it was a real fertile time.
Well, you were working with him as an assistant director. Did you have that? Were you an assistant director with other directors before working with him?
Right. I had been an assistant director for a few years. I went through a training program and became one rather quickly, and could see instantly it was something that I wasn't going to do for a long time. And then I wrote a lot of screenplays to try and get them done. It was a good way to. It's the cheapest way to make movies, you know, write a screenplay and Xerox it. And nothing ever happened, but I learned what I wanted to do. And I hadn't been an assistant director for many years, and his organization called me and asked me if I wanted to work. And I didn't at first, and then I saw McCabe and Miss Miller, and I thought, okay, whatever you want me to do. Then I wrote something for him, and he produced my first two films, Welcome to L.A. and Remember My Name.
What was he doing on the set different from other directors who you'd worked with?
Well, that's the thing with Bob. He doesn't teach you anything, but you learn a lot if you're watching. He goes from A to Z so gracefully that it's almost an invisible process, how he works. He, over the years, has developed his own techniques that completely coincide with his point of view, so it seems really effortless. And he, you know, obviously leaves a lot open for spontaneity, which is something that I really responded to, because in my own imagination, if I ever got to shoot a film, I wanted to do that myself.
Well, are you referring to like improvisation?
Yeah, but it's never, you know, that's, I think pure improvisation is you get two actors, you put them in a set and tell them what the situation is, walk away and turn on the camera. I mean, it's never really like that. It's a rehearsed improvisation, if there's such a thing, where I seem to be able to write pretty good on my feet, where I say, well, why don't you say this, and you say this, and then somebody, but if you don't want to say that, say something else, and then people like Wally Shawn or Keith or something will come up with a very funny line, and you just keep going. But Bob has, even down to where he puts his camera and how he goes about the technical side is so effortless that it's very deceiving to watch him work.
Were you able to use any of that open-ended style with Made in Heaven?
Yeah, we did that a lot. Tim is, you know, he'd been... One of the misfortunes of Hollywood is that typecasting becomes, you know, I mean, it's one of the prejudices of a monolithic structure, you know, and because Tim had done very serious films and hadn't done anything light and romantic, people assumed he couldn't do it. But when I first met him, he's very funny, a very charming person, very inventive, and I mean, we just spent the night last night here in New York, and we just laughed all night long. He's so funny. He's like jazz. I mean, you can give him something to start with, and he'll go off on his own and come back in the same theme. And it was a real thrill working with him. I think he and Kelly are simply two of the best actors working today. And in a film that is very romantic and rather ethereal in its concept, and Kelly plays a new soul, so to speak, who's never even been to Earth, it would have been easy to, in the wrong hands, to make it not such a dense experience. But I think someone like Kelly has such intelligence that you can see her thoughts, even if you don't know what they are, and that really helped. And I was thrilled working with them, but it took a while for them to get used to how I work. And I think both of them really responded. I was very pleased.
Initially, they wanted more structure?
Well, no, I think it's, again, a matter of trust. There's a great quote, I don't know who said it, it's that making movies is like making love. You're never sure how the other guy does it, you know? And I just do what I do, but when people come on the set, you get the summary of their whole experience, and you start to realize that films are made in a rather structured way with so much of the life has been squeezed out of it already, you know. And to me, a screenplay is as important to anybody else, but it's not the final word by any stretch. And if you hire an actor, it's like hiring another writer, and certainly a collaborator. And I open up to ideas from almost anybody, but I also refuse the right to accept them. But with actors, they're such a smart breed of people and crazy that their ideas are usually sensational. And I'm always saying, geez, well, let's use that. I'll take credit for it later.
I want to talk with you more about your movies, but we're going to take a short break first. My guest is film director and screenwriter Alan Rudolph, and his movies include Welcome to L.A., Choose Me, and Trouble in Mind. He directed the new movie, Made in Heaven, that stars Timothy Hutton and Kelly McGillis. It opens this week. We'll be back after this short break. This is Fresh Air. Film director and screenwriter Alan Rudolph is my guest. One of the things I've heard that you do on the set, which struck me as very intriguing and very unusual, and maybe it's not right, maybe you don't really do this, but I'd read you sometimes just play music as actors are doing a scene so that the music will help transfer the mood.
I do that. I'm sure I'd be arrested if there were laws against such things, but most of my films are not plot oriented. They're really about behavior. The characters lead the story instead of the story leading the characters. And music seems to be the number one tool to create a mood. And mood and behavior seem to go hand in hand. And on this film, which there's so much of it that was atmospheric, you know, even though there was a story going on, heaven was definitely a place that was dominated by mood. And Mark Isham, who is such a magnificent musical thing, he had come up with a few temporary pieces before we start shooting, and I would play them all the time on the set, everything while we were acting during dailies. And all my films basically have had music in them, and a lot of live music. And as soon as someone tells me you can't do something, it's when I do it. And on my first film, Welcome to L.A., which was about music to some degree, we did a lot of live music and dialogue at the same time, which sound technicians will tell you cannot do. But now I've done it, and I've worked with the same sound guys for the last five films, and they get disappointed if we don't do that.
Mm.
But it's for an actor, especially contemporary actors who have grown up as much on music as anything else, I find it's very, very helpful. And also, it seems that the worlds that the characters in my films occupy are not necessarily the real world, so to speak, you can't turn on the radio and be in the mood for one of my films. So music helps, again, define the boundaries and the possibilities.
In Made in Heaven, your new movie, Timothy Hutton plays a drifter. Once he's sent back to Earth, he becomes a real drifter. And there are drifters. There's a drifter in Trouble in Mind. There's a drifter in Choose Me. Did you ever see yourself as that kind of character, or do you strongly identify with a drifter?
I always liked that group in the 50s, the Drifters. Well, I don't know, you know, I'm not afraid of too many things, but one thing I'm not too comfortable with is analyzing how I fit into all this.
Right.
Somebody pointed out to me once that, do you realize that most of your films start with people either coming or going into a place? And I thought, well, no, but I'll take credit for it if it sounds intelligent, you know. I think maybe in this crazy existence of ours, moving around and trying to find something might be the most worthwhile occupation. I was talking the other day with somebody. Can you imagine being 12 years old when most of your human tools are on the table ready to be used for the first time, and you'll become aware of your sexuality and the sexuality of others and society and accomplishment, and then 8 years later you're 20 years old when you've basically done everything you're going to do at least once, and now you're going to spend the rest of your life redoing it and refining it or blowing it. And now imagine doing all of that during the last 8 years of this president, and what that means to the stimulants that you've encountered in your life. And I think drifting and searching during this, especially during this last period, is almost essential for some kind of enlightenment, because you're certainly not going to get it in any of the political, economic, or cultural fallout of these times. And I don't know. I don't know if that reflects anything about me, except that I've been living a rather unreal life for many years now. I mean, I seem to always go the opposite way of traffic, and maybe that's why there's nobody ever goes to the movies. I don't know. I think the search for something in America is as part of being an American as anything else.
You know, I really hope that you don't find this overly psychological or Freudian, but I feel like I should bring up here that your father directed the Donna Reed Show. Your father was a director. And that show was really, for so many of us who grew up in the 50s, like the example of what the perfect family was supposed to be. And, I mean, you've really so much departed from that suburban view of the perfect life.
Yeah, well, my dad did a lot of shows in the 50s, 60s. Donna Reed, Ann Southern, My Favorite Martian, Batman, all that. And I think I don't know if it was the times or if it's just genetic, but I think you basically rebel against your parents even if you love them, which I do. And everyone says, oh, you got in the movie business because of your father, but basically I so little identified with what he was doing that I actually thought I that would be the last place I wanted to be. But then my brother had got me a Super 8 camera when they first came out. He got it in Hong Kong, and I started shooting my own little movies, and it seemed to be the one language I understood. But my dad sees my films, and, you know, he gives me this kind of odd look and said, you know what, a little chase scene would be really good. You know? But, I mean, he's proud of me, but he's not sure why.
Did you grow up in Los Angeles or in the area?
Isn't that an awful statement?
but your movies are so urban to me, you know? And I figured maybe you grew up really, really yearning for the excitement of a city.
Well, yeah, I don't really get Los Angeles. I never have. Welcome to L.A., people who didn't respond to or upset because it wasn't a travelogue, you know, of Los Angeles. We never really occupied any of the highlights, so to speak, of Los Angeles. But when I was a kid, we came to New York, and it was the first time I'd been out of the city, the non-city of Los Angeles, and into a real city. We drove across country. I was about 7, 8, and my dad was working here, and we stayed here for many, many, many months, and it was in the 50s, and it was at a time when it was really that fairy tale version of the big city, you know, New York in the 50s. And that was as an impressive an event as has happened in my life. And maybe it's good that I never really got to live here completely, or never got to be raised in a place where it would rain all the time, which is what I really love, because it made me yearn for that and probably gave me a good degree of dissatisfaction to keep me searching.
We only have a couple of minutes left, but when you were growing up, were movies really magic for you?
Never saw a fade-in I didn't like, and I still feel that way. But the interesting part of it all is I'm not a necrophiliac. I didn't go to film school. I'm completely self-taught about these things. But, you know, when you see a movie when you're a kid, you haven't a clue what the director does. I mean, you know, don't even know what it is. And you just know that there's these big faces on the screen doing amazing things. I think the most influential movie I ever saw in my life was the original Invaders from Mars. You know?
I love that film.
I mean, I was a kid. The guy was a kid. It was all shot. I didn't know it at the time, but from a kid's perspective. And it was just ironic enough that it stimulated you, and I got it, or at least I thought I got it, because I'm only really interested in the things I don't understand. I figure the rest of it is all busy work. And
when you're watching the rushes of a movie that you're making, do you look for the same kind of magic that you felt watching movies?
Yeah, just watching dailies is the highlight of any shoot for me, and I invite everyone, and I play a lot of music. I have it hooked up through the screen, and every shot is always different. Every take is different, and I really do need that magic to encourage me to go on tomorrow. And, you know, as soon as you make a splice and start cutting, it seems to deflate the magic. But when a film works, the total is better than the parts, no matter how good they were. And that's the great thing about movies, is that the audience plays a lead role. And it's, I think most movies today ignores the audience. They go right for their popcorn buying potential instead of really for their emotional involvement. And I think movies are going to either pave the way to the future or keep us going in this cul-de-sac that we're in now.
Alan Rudolph, thanks so much for talking with us about your movies.
Well, thank you.
Alan Rudolph spoke to us from the NPR Bureau in New York. His movies include Welcome to L.A., Choose Me, and Trouble in Mind. His new movie, Made in Heaven, opens this week. It stars Timothy Hutton and Kelly McGillis. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.